a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Come on in for an evening of poems and stories about the American West. A land of legend, of romance, of friendship and courage. A motherlode of remembrance. A true showcase of the Old West with the old cowboy, J.C. Halsey.
Howdy, folks. This is the Wild West Showdown, and I'm the old cowboy. I sure hope you've been enjoying this holiday season as much as I am. You know, it's sometimes hard for me to realize and accept how fast the years roll by. It seems only a few days ago that my publicist and I were talking about beginning a radio show. And look at it now. This is episode 78, and we're not planning on slowing down anytime soon. The new year's going to be on us before you know it. And we've got great plans for the Outlaws franchise in the coming year. I'd ask each of you to keep tuning in and travel the new year with us as we continue to offer a new episode of the Wild West Showdown each week. By the way, if you've missed any of the episodes, you can listen to any and all of them because they're archived at Blog Talk Radio, the Wild West Showdown. Well, that's enough about that. Let's start today's show with a song from a very talented young lady, Devon Dawson. Where's My Cowboy? I Gotta Be a Cowgirl.
Strong and longing for my cowboy, and I'm wondering what the future has in store. But finding him is hard as putting socks on a rooster. I'm waiting, praying, that's why I'm saying, where's my cowboy, my top hand? Tall and slim, with his shy cowboyish grin, I'll know he's my cowboy, he's my man. Slow, he's got to know what work is. Bring home the bacon and I'll fry it in the pan. I'll watch him close to see he treats his horse as good as me. He's gotta have some do-right and wear his jeans tight. Where's my cowboy?
On December the 5th, 1871, the great steer wrestling rodeo star Bill Pickett was born near Austin, Texas. He was the son of a black and Indian parents. Pickett learned his roping and riding skills working as a cowboy on a Texas ranch. While working there, he attracted the attention of the Miller brothers who ran the 101 Ranch Wild West Show, the successful touring extravaganza that also made stars of folks such as Will Rogers and Tom Mix. The 101 Ranch and other Wild West shows played a key role in the evolution of rodeos from small local competitions among neighboring ranch hands into stylized Hollywood-influenced entertainment productions. The Wild West Rodeo has even created new events like wild bull riding that, in contrast to real ranching skills like roping and bronc riding, were never widely practiced by sensible traditional cowboys. Bill Pickett introduced bulldogging, now better known as steer wrestling, to the world of rodeo entertainment. As a special attraction for the audiences of the 101 Ranch, Pickett rode his horse, Spradley, alongside a running longhorn steer. He grabbed the steer's head and bit its upper lip. Quite unorthodox but effective means of forcing the steer to follow his commands. Since bulldogs were known to control cattle by biting onto their lower lips and ferociously hanging on, Pickett's steer wrestling method became known as bulldogging. Of course, it's unlikely that any working cowboy ever attempted to control a steer by bulldogging it, but the audience loved Pickett's stunt. Steer wrestling became a standard rodeo competition, although few cowboys were willing to copy Pickett's lip-biting method, which was replaced by other techniques. Pickett's bulldogging performances made him a national radio star, but the American fascination for Wild West shows and rodeos faded after World War I and the 101 Ranch closed in 1931. Pickett died a forgotten man not long afterward at age 70 from injuries suffered while working horses for the 101 Ranch in Texas. His contributions to the sport were recognized in 1972 when he was posthumously inducted into the National Rodeo Hall of Fame. Here's a poem I found recently, and I felt I wanted to recite it. It was written by Rusty Brook. He rolls from his rucksack. It's way before dawn. There's chores that are waiting, he thinks with a yawn. He puts on his Wranglers, his boots, hat and spurs. He guzzles black coffee before the world ever stirs. With little men saddled, his chaps are in place. The pain as he mounts up puts a frown on his face. He sits in the saddle. The pain soon subsides. He heads toward the sunrise. What a beautiful ride. He rides through the pasture, just him and his mount. They've made the same journey more times than he can count. But this day is different than all of the rest. His chest feels heavy, and he can't catch his breath. He falls from the saddle, and in the pasture he lay. His mount wouldn't leave him. Not now, not today. The old horse, he nudged him, his nose to his cheek. Get up, you old cowboy. You ain't never been weak. The little man didn't leave him. He stayed through it all. The old cowboy had raised him, be it 12 years this fall. They found him the next day, the old horse and the old man. The old cowboy had crossed over with the reins in his hand. Rusty Brook, January the 20th, 2015. Being loyal means giving or showing firm and constant support or allegiance to a person or institution. Loyalty is devotion and faithfulness to a cause, a country, a group, or a person. These words mean a lot to me. However, this question has been coming to my mind more and more in recent times. Should there come a time when one should quit being loyal? What caused this question to trouble me and question the word? Well, I've recently visited with some authors that are staying loyal to their publisher, even though that publisher hasn't been loyal to them. These authors have signed lengthy contracts in good faith for the publisher to publish their book, and that publisher did just that. But then the rest of the things a publisher should do for the author are seemingly non-existent. They put the books on Amazon at a ridiculously high price, and they're not selling. They're just sitting there stagnating. When a book ranks in the 1 and 2 million, in my opinion, something should be done. Now, don't misunderstand. I do understand loyalty, and I respect loyalty very much. But goodness gracious, folks, maybe this blind loyalty should be vacated and look elsewhere for help. That is, unless an author is satisfied with their current situation. Maybe the author doesn't want anything more than to have their name as an author on a book. I agree that that is sometimes all a person wants, and there's nothing wrong with that. To have your name on a book as the author does have a certain satisfaction to it. But how much more satisfaction and recognition could you have if more folks were reading and sharing your book? Sometimes hard decisions have to be made, and reversing one's loyalty is a tough decision. So I reckon a person has to decide what they want when they become an author. Do you want to be an unrecognized author? Or do you want to be an author that folks are wanting to read and want to share with others? It is a tough decision, but one that needs to be made. Here's Casey Pilgreen. Enjoy the ride.
He met her at a rodeo in Houston. The way he smiled somehow caught her eye. Somehow she knew they were meant to be together. So when he left, she never told him goodbye. Tonight he's up in a rodeo in Tucson. He drew a bull I'm not sure a man could ride. He said a prayer as he held on to her picture. Said, with some luck, I can make it out alive. And she said, I don't care if you're riding for the money. I don't care if you fall off in the gate. Care if you never make the big time. Hold your head up and enjoy the ride. Hey cowboy, just enjoy the ride. He's up in a rodeo in Vegas. One more round, hell, he might just win it all. He'd always dreamed of being a world champion, but her love is what he needs most of all. 'Cause she said, I don't care riding for the money. I don't care if you fall off in the gate. I don't care if you never make the big time. Hold your head up and enjoy the ride. I don't care if you're riding. If you fall off in the gate, I don't care if you never make the big time. Hold your head up and enjoy the ride. Hey cowboy, just enjoy the ride.
Let's visit with our guest. We want to welcome to the Wild West Showdown today award-winning author and journalist John L. Moore. Welcome, Mr. Moore.
Well, thank you. Good to be with you.
You've been writing for quite some time now, haven't you?
Well, I literally began writing for pay when I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
I was gathering cattle on the family ranch, and my mother came with the noon meal and said that the editor of the local paper had called. And I pretty much unsaddled my horse and went to work in a newsroom. And I worked for the Miles City Daily paper for 3 years. And that was really that was really my education. That was my background in professional riding.
Okay. In 2015, I believe you won an award, the Will Rogers Medallion Award for Western Fiction.
Yes, I won the silver in that award.
Okay.
For excellence in Western literature for my novel Looking for Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
And when I received the award, one judge kind of pulled me aside and said, you know, we really don't even have a category for a book like yours. That's kind of been the story of my career, is that pretty hard to pigeonhole.
Mm-hmm.
I write literary work, but yet it's readable. I mean, it wins literary awards, but yet it's readable and it's very authentic cowboy, you know, Western ranch literature.
Could you explain what that word literary means?
Yeah, a literary writer as compared to a, you know, a commercial writer,
okay,
is that we approach writing as an art form.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some literary writers write very dense books that are very hard to understand books,
right,
et cetera. Sometimes nothing happens. You know, that's kind of the old saying about a literary book is you read it and nothing happens, but there's a lot of character development,
mm-hmm,
and that's what's missing in most commercial fiction, is that you have a lot of action, but you don't have a lot of character development, and you don't have a lot of expertise, a lot of wordsmithing as far as the beauty of the prose. I probably have more poetic qualities than anything, but I did a volume of poetry when I was 20 years old,
mm-hmm,
and realized then that, you know, really there was just no future in poetry as far as a career unless you wanted to be professor somewhere.
Right.
But that's probably my nature, is more of a poetic nature.
Okay, when you won this award, how did that make you feel?
Well, it's always satisfying. I've won other awards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice if your work is recognized. I've always been a little, I wouldn't say shy, but just reluctant to enter that competitive field of writing, simply because there's so much politics involved that you just you lose that purity, the essence of why you write. You know, if you're writing for awards, if you're writing for these other things, then it's pretty easy to get your mind and your heart away from your original vision. Mm-hmm. And it's nice, like I say, to win the awards, to have the recognition and the acceptance.
Have you written anything other than Westerns?
I've had an extensive magazine and newspaper career, so there's all kinds of writing that I've done that's not Western. But anything that's in a book-length manuscript form, I really have to write what I know and where my soul is.
Sure.
That is the West. I mean, I'm a third-generation Montana rancher. I returned to the family ranch in 1979 after my dad passed away. I got a hardship discharge from the military and came home. So it's what I grew up in. It's what I know. It would be really hard for me to write something set in New York City, for
mm-hmm,
example.
Okay, how many books have you had published?
That's a hard one to answer, because The Breaking of the Israelis actually had 5 publishers.
Mm.
And my nonfiction book, Take the Reins, has also been published as Loosening the Reins,
mm-hmm,
and Letter to Jess, so it's had 3 publishers. I did a couple of smaller self-published regional books. So if I included the smaller self-published regional ones, I guess I would have about 10 different titles,
okay,
that have been published through the years.
Okay, you mentioned this one book had 5 different publishers. How many different publishers have you had in your career?
I must be up around 10.
Okay.
If I count 2 that I was under contract with,
mm-hmm,
and then did not actually publish with, my first contract was with Macmillan, and the editor who signed me to the contract was fired,
mm,
and the attorneys at Macmillan said, we're canceling your contract. And I said, well, as I read the contract, you can't do that. And they said, well, that's right, but we have more lawyers than you do.
So, yeah. Well,
so that's what happened there.
You mentioned living on a ranch. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we ranched just north of Miles City, Montana, which, of course, is a famous cow town, you know, western town. I was raised here at a big family ranch in the sense that it was founded by my grandparents, and they had seven sons. Five of them were bachelors, and they all remained on the ranch with my father, and we lived a mile away. And I ended up having to do a lot of cattle work and everything with all these bachelor uncles, which is really the whole theme behind my first novel, The Breaking of Ezra Reilly.
You're married. Do you have kids?
Yes, we have two children, son and a daughter, both grown and gone, and we have six grandchildren.
Okay.
And none of our kids are close by, unfortunately, so we don't get to see our grandkids very often.
Well, when you do, they enjoy the ranch, don't they?
Yeah, they were just here. They came for an early Thanksgiving, one set.
Great.
Four of them did. And my oldest grandson is 11.
Yeah.
And I got him out in the hills a lot. He likes to shoot. He likes to hunt. Likes to be horseback. So we spent as much time as we could out in the hills.
You dress like a cowboy, and you live on a ranch. I guess we could call you a cowboy, couldn't we?
You know, the kind of men that I grew up around, there really was that kind of a sense that you never really claimed to be anything.
Mm-hmm.
You let your work, your performance, prove what you are. I've done it, and I've done it in the hills, rough country. Roped a lot of stock, doctored a lot of stock in the hills, had my share of horse wrecks, was a fair to midland roper at one time. I started roping at Brandings when I was 5 years old.
Hmm.
So I've had plenty of experiences with the real deal.
Sure. Okay, you mentioned at 17 years old you climbed off your horse and became a rider. What do you think would have happened if you'd have stayed on your horse?
Well, it's easy to wonder about those things.
Mm-hmm.
I still would have been a writer. I still would have wrote exactly how, you know, what twists or turns my career might have taken, I don't know. Because when I went to work for that Miles City paper, journalism back then was still good. It's not like it is today.
Mm-hmm.
My publisher had been the managing editor of the Denver Post. My city editor and sports editor was a five-time winner of the Montana Sports Writer of the Year Award.
Do you remember the first story that you wrote?
No, this is funny, because the first article that I had published for the paper was, I had to cover an American Legion baseball game, and I was an athlete in high school, but I didn't play baseball, and I didn't know that much about it, but I went and I covered that game, and I handed it to my city editor, the five-time Montana Sports Writer of the Year winner. And this is the old school days, you know, reams of paper, a glue pot, you know, all of that. And as I'm sitting there watching him edit, he's using a red felt marker, and it looks like my poor old story, which is probably way too long, probably 40 column inches. It looks like it's just bleeding to death.
Yeah.
And he finally, when he's done, it's about 24 inches. And still, when it went to the back shop for paste-up, it was still a little bit too long.
Mm-hmm.
So they cut out my byline.
Oh, boy.
So that was, to me, just very symbolic, you know, just pretty fascinating to have, to put so much into it, see it just bleed to death in front of your eyes,
mm-hmm.
and then when it does appear,
you don't get credit
for it.
The
one thing is your credit line.
Yeah. Okay, you started writing before computers. You know what cut and paste is then, don't you?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I know what the real cut and paste is.
Yeah.
Because we did use scissors and a glue pot.
Yes, I know. That's how I published my first poetry book, with cut and paste. Anyway, how has the computer helped you with your writing?
Obviously, they help. Sometimes I'd like to just throw them in the river.
Mm-hmm.
They frustrate me as much as anything. And I'm, for a cowboy, I'm fairly computer literate.
Sure.
Now, for your average person, I'm not. But for a working, you know, 64-year-old Montana cowboy, I'm pretty computer savvy. Just the same, they just drive me crazy. And I wish they just had basically like the computerized version of a good typewriter, to where things were somewhat manual, somewhat simple, not all the bells and whistles.
Okay, are you working on anything now?
I have another Ezra Riley novel in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I hope to get to it this winter.
What was your favorite treat as a kid? Like candy, cake, something like that?
A good apple pie. And they're harder and harder to find anymore, but... You know, a good apple pie, I think, is about the best thing in the world.
Okay, so that would be your favorite treat today, then, an apple pie?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. You've been writing since you're 17 years old. Has there been a time in your life that you've gotten discouraged and says, I'm just not going to do this no more?
Yeah, about every other day. There are just things that took my focus off the writing. And I kind of stepped out of it for a time. I continued to write. I did magazine work, but I didn't do any books. And you remove yourself from that literary scene a little bit, and boy, people forget about you quickly.
Yes, they do.
And everything changes.
You mentioned at 17 years old, you wrote your first article for the newspaper, and you didn't get credit for it. That would have been enough right there to make somebody stop. Then you keep on writing. You keep on writing and getting awards, and you keep all of these other things, and everything's going right for you, and you seem like you made it to the mountaintop, and you slid down the other side so many times, yet you're still writing. That's impressive.
I feel like the Lord's given me a gift.
Yes.
And maybe I didn't do everything. You know, maybe college would have helped me. I never did get my college degree. I hitchhiked 12,000 miles, and I got a lot of education in that.
Sure.
I was kind of a, you know, again, an experiential writer. A Jack London, you know, style was always what I wanted to do. I wanted to go out and live life. I have to jump into things and really live them and experience them and then write from my heart about those things. So I don't have any regrets that way. And when you're a writer, you're a writer. A lot of people want to write, and unfortunately, a lot of people simply want to be known as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And with the self-publishing, and as easy as it is today, and all the e-books and everything else, it sounds mean to say, but there are just entirely too many amateurs out there, and they have muddied the water. They're not having to run the gauntlet that we had to in times past, where your manuscript went through a slush pile and having to get an editor and find an agent and get all of these rejections and learn to develop and grow. Not enough of them are experiencing that, and then they're saying, well, I'm an author. What does that mean anymore?
Yeah,
you know?
You're right.
So you self-published your own book and blah, blah, blah.
How can folks get in touch with you? Are you on Facebook, Twitter, and all these social media sites?
Well, I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
I have a personal Facebook wall, and then I have my John L. Moore writer Facebook page that has about 12,400 followers. I'm easily found on Amazon. You know, I have a writer page there, and so it's John L. Moore, M-O-O-R-E.
We've enjoyed visiting with you today on the Wild West Showdown, and I want you to know that you're welcome to come back and visit anytime.
Well, I'd be glad to do it. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Here's a poem by Gary J.C. Penny.
Back in the 1950s, when I was just a kid, we watched cowboys on Saturday morning, then tried to mimic all they did. The Lone Ranger, Tonto, Roy, and Dale, Poncho, and the Cisco Kid. They stood up for good and justice, and they believed in what they did. Evil was fought with brains and fists, and sometimes even a gun. And though their perils looked really tough, we knew they were having fun. It looked so great when our heroes came and the ranches were saved from theft. Only then did we know that all was well when that silver bullet had been left. And when those shows were over, we'd dash outside to play, trying to create every move we'd seen until the end of the day. Why, we'd see hombres that no adult could see just because we were at play. We'd draw our guns and fire off a round to dispense evil without delay. A Fenner 50 was the gun of choice because it looked so cool. It was easy to draw and holster too. It was perfect for a duel. A shiny barrel of silver that appeared as though engraved. If that gun was strapped to your side, you knew you could be brave. Chambered for a 45 with a cylinder that went round and round. No bad guy would dare challenge you, or he knew he'd hit the ground. That gun would shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot. You could fire that gun all day, never having to stop to load. That was the cowboy way. Then all of a sudden, from behind your back, you hear a pistol sing. But luck is with you on this day, as you hear the bullet zing. Quick, duck behind the hedge, or get behind the big oak tree. Stand your ground. Don't back down, because a hero cannot flee. You take a look. All is calm. Not a villain to be seen. Just like the coward that he is, he's already fled the scene. But you have a hunch, so you play it out, because you know just how he thinks. He's ridden into the old mining town to have himself some drinks. Your hunch was right, because there's his horse, just where you thought it'd be. Then you knew the time was near at hand. It would come down to him or me. By now, it was getting late in the day in this dusty old western cow town, and you knew the time had finally come for that once and final showdown. So with all the courage that you can find, you give a loud and meaningful shout, "Butch Cavendish, you lying, thieving, cowardly yellow dog, I challenge you to come out." My nerves are tense. My eyes are steeled. My courage has calmed all fears. When from behind that door, out steps my mom, asking, "What were you saying, dear?" "Oh, Mom, golly gee, I haven't seen you for a while. I was just calling out my bad guy." And then I saw her smile. "Well, I'm sorry that I had to come and interrupt your play, but I'll bet if you'll come back tomorrow, you'll find he didn't get away. All good cowboys need to eat, so come and get your favorite chuck. You'll find to outgun those outlaws, you'll need a little more than luck. So check your guns at the door and come in from TV land. It's time to eat your franks and beans, so go and wash your hands." Right on time, she'd called me in as the twilight began to shimmer, and all my friends were heading for home as the streetlights began to glimmer. Pleasant thoughts raced through my mind as the daylight was about to cease of my Saturday morning cowboy heroes who had vowed to keep the peace. Their values were instilled in me to distinguish wrong from right. You stand up for truth and justice, and sometimes you'll have to fight. I miss my friends from Saturday morning. I know they'll never die. My memories will keep those friends of mine at that big ranch in the sky. As I think back to a simpler, slower time, to the time of a innocent cowboy show, I can still remember how my heroes would leave me just before they had to go. Ah, Cisco, ah, Poncho, and a hearty "Hey, old Silver," too. But Roy and Dale, well, you know they said it best when they sang "Happy Trails to You."
How about Chad Prather's thought for the day?
Can someone please tell me the merit in turning up your radio so loud that everyone within a 6-block radius from you hears nothing but boom, 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 boom. Windows are falling out of buildings around you. I don't care if you drive out into the middle of nowhere and crank your volume so loud in your automobile that your face melts like the little creepy dude on Raiders of the Lost Ark. But I don't need to witness you getting turned up. I don't want to hear it, Spinal Tap. I realize you're trying to turn the knob up to 11, but it's loud enough. I'm not sure that song has a melody, and certainly not sure it has any words. Not any that makes any sense. Just boom, 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 boom. It's the only beat I know because I can't concentrate while you're trying to shake the brain cells loose from your skull. Yesterday, I was coming out of a sporting goods store stocking up on a few items that every red-blooded Texas male ought to have in his possession at all times. I'll let you fill in the blanks. And this kid comes pulling up with his windows down. Doom, 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 doom. And we locked eyes. He glared at me, and he said one word. What? Well, my friend, I'm happy to know that you understand and can use that word, what, because in 15 years when you're sitting in the audiologist's office trying to figure out what the hell happened to your hearing and why you are now permanently deaf with irreversible loss and damage to your eardrums, the word what is going to come in very handy for you for the rest of your life. You might as well just go ahead and learn it in a couple of different languages. What? Huh? What? What? What'd you say? Listen to me. Turn it down. I don't want to hear it. Neither does anybody else. Thank you very much. Public service announcement. Hope you got a smile on your face on a Friday afternoon. Looking forward to a weekend. God knows I need some peace and quiet. Boom, 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 boom. Boom, 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 boom. See, we can handle that level.
Expert. A person who has comprehensive and authoritative knowledge of or skill in a particular area. You remember that little story about what an expert is? An X is a has-been, and a spurt is a small bit of water. I was at an event recently when I overheard an expert telling an author how to go about having their books made into audios. The only thing this expert had correct was to put them on ACX, which is an Amazon company. I reckon I should have kept my mouth shut, since I'm surely no expert. But the old cowboy don't like to hear untruths, and this person was full of them. So I butted in and gave my 2 cents worth. Well, you should have seen the way this so-called expert looked at me. Like, how dare you interrupt me when I know more than you do? Well, it just so happens that I deal with ACX quite a few times, and I do think I understand it fairly well. But then again, maybe I don't, because I'm no expert. Now, I think it's about time for a little bit of cowboy wisdom. It's hard to make a comeback when you ain't never been no place. We want to thank Chad Prather for his thought for the day, and thanks to Casey Pilgreen, Rusty Brook, Devon Dawson, and Gary J.C. Penny for their contribution to today's show. And a very special thanks to John L. Moore for being our guest today. Thanks so much for tuning in. This is the old cowboy saying adios and happy trails.
Come on back next week to the Wild West Showdown with the old cowboy J.C. Holsey.